from ABC News, World News This Week. I'm Chuck Sievertson in New York. Coming up...
He helped to steer the royal family and the monarchy so that it remains an institution indisputably vital.
Tributes for Prince Philip. Expert testimony surrounding George Floyd's death.
A healthy person subjected to what Mr. Floyd was subjected to would have died.
Pleas from health officials to remain vigilant.
The B117 variant is now the most common lineage circulating in the United States.
And a joyful reunion.
The lights went on again in my life. I looked into his eyes, and his eyes sparkled.
The people and events that made headlines when World News This Week continues.
Like the expert carriage driver that he was, he helped to steer the royal family and the monarchy so that it remains an institution indisputably vital to the balance and happiness of our national life.
He stood by his wife's side for more than seven decades. This week, Prince Philip, Queen Elizabeth's husband, passed away at the age of 99. Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh and the patriarch of the royal family, also helped to modernize the institution throughout the 20th century. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, among those remembering his life this week. ABC's James Longman has more.
A lifetime spent by Queen Elizabeth's side. Prince Philip was a force of nature, the longest-serving consort to a monarch in British history. He may have been born a prince, but it was hardship that Philip first inherited.
Descended from both Danish and Greek royalty, his family fled war and revolution in Greece when he was just a baby. It said he was carried to safety in a crate of oranges.
At the start of a promising career in the military, Lieutenant Philip Mountbatten met the future queen when she was only a teenager. Forced to renounce his own royal titles for love, they wed in 1947. Theirs was one of the enduring marriages of our time.
All too often, I fear Prince Philip has had to listen to me speaking. But he has quite simply been my strength and stay all these years.
In some ways, the original moderniser, it was the Duke who wanted his wife's coronation televised, creating a landmark TV event.
All this I promise to do.
At all times, forced to walk two paces behind Elizabeth, but in life, her equal partner. In private, making major family decisions, like where to send their four children to school.
Like all families, we went through the full range of pleasures and tribulations of bringing up children. I'm naturally somewhat biased, but I think our children have done rather well under very different and difficult and demanding circumstances.
Many say the true measure of their marriage was the laughter they shared.
I think that the main lesson that we've learned is that tolerance is the one essential ingredient of any happy marriage. And... You can take it from me that the Queen has the quality of tolerance and abundance.
It was Philip, apparently, who encouraged the Queen to make that famous speech celebrating Diana after grieving Britons had accused her of being too stoic, too aloof, too royal.
In good times and bad, she never lost her capacity to smile and laugh, nor to inspire others with her warmth and kindness.
Guiding his family in times of grief and joy, Prince Philip would live to see Elizabeth celebrate her Diamond Jubilee and the next generation of royals marry and have children. Among them, his beloved grandson William, shoring up the succession with Prince George, the future heir to the throne. He retired from public duties in 2017, and recovering from a hip operation, he made it to the wedding of Harry and Meghan, one of the last events we saw him attend. Prince Philip would make headlines in 2019 when he flipped his car in a terrible crash near the Queen's Sandringham estate. He injured a passenger in another car and was widely criticised for not apologising immediately. Since then, he was barely seen in public. The Queen often left to perform her duties alone.
But Prince Philip, not without controversy over comments made over the years that were seen as insensitive, elitist, or racist. Here again, ABC's James Longman.
There were comments that he made over the years on various different trips that perhaps were kind of ill-thought or maybe sort of in bad taste, and they got a lot of press at the time, but ultimately it's the reflected glory of the Queen that hits Philip. People will miss him because they love her.
But Prince Philip wasn't just a companion to the Queen. ABC's Maggie Rooley has more on the work he did throughout his royal life.
More than 20,000 solo engagements, more than 2,000 trips throughout the UK and abroad. He was a hardworking royal. He was one of the first royals to really tackle environmentalism as a huge tenet that he supported, something that he's passed on to his son and grandson, something the royal family still champions.
Tributes to Prince Philip pouring in from all over the world. President Biden and the First Lady offering their condolences, saying in a statement, his legacy will live on not only through his family, but all the charitable endeavors he shaped. ABC's Tom Rivers with more on Prince Philip's family legacy.
Yes, Philip had an incredibly unique, privileged role on the world stage. But as Prime Minister Boris Johnson says, he was also the head of a family.
They have lost not just a much-loved and highly respected public figure, but a devoted husband, and a proud and loving father, grandfather, and in recent years, great-grandfather.
Philip leaves behind 4 children, 8 grandchildren, and 9 great-grandchildren. Tom Rivers, ABC News, London.
ABC's Diane Macedo talked to Royals contributor Robert Jobson, who had more to add about Philip's role in the Queen's life and why his funeral will likely be low-key.
He is somebody that really enabled her to reign with such dignity and class that she was able really to do her job with a bit of laughter too. He would be somebody who would make the Queen laugh, and I think that's half the battle when you've got such an important, serious job.
And so what does this mean for the citizens there in the UK?
Well, there will be a period of mourning, but of course this funeral will be very different because we're still under COVID restrictions here due to the coronavirus. And that will have an impact upon the way that the arrangements for the funeral will take place. There will be no mass areas of people to gather. Yes, in that respect, it'd be sad. But the Duke of Edinburgh all his life was someone who hated fuss. He absolutely loathed it. And in fact, when he was asked about becoming, how is he going to celebrate his 100th birthday? He said he couldn't think of anything worse. So in a way, sadly, he got his wish at not making his 100th birthday, but he was somebody who was actually quite shy when it comes to self-praise.
A healthy person subjected to what Mr. Floyd was subjected to would have died as a result of what he was subjected to.
That's Dr. Martin Tobin on the witness stand in the trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin. Chauvin facing murder and manslaughter charges in the death of George Floyd last May. This week, jurors heard from experts who went into detail about the events surrounding Floyd's death. ABC's Alex Perez has more on Tobin's testimony.
The medical expert was direct and unshakable, telling the jury George Floyd died because of the actions of former police officer Derek Chauvin, not because of drugs or a history of heart disease.
The cause of death is a low level of oxygen that caused the brain damage and caused the heart to stop.
Dr. Martin Tobin, an expert on breathing and lung function, testifying he watched the videos of Floyd's final moments hundreds of times, explaining what he saw when the officers pinned Floyd down on the asphalt, handcuffed.
It's like the left side is in a vice. It was almost to the effect as if a surgeon had gone in and removed the lung.
Dr. Tobin testifying the officers' actions interfered with central features of how we breathe.
To understand the knee on the neck, you need to examine your own necks, all of you here in the jury, like I'm doing now.
The jury captivated, and most did touch their necks as the doctor spoke. He walked them through the video, frame by frame, pointing to Chauvin's body position.
What you're seeing is that the toe of his boot is no longer touching the ground. This means that all of his body weight is being directed down at Mr. Floyd's neck.
He showed how Floyd struggled to stay alive.
He's using his fingers and his knuckles against the street to try and crank up the right side of his chest. This is his only way to try and get air to get into the right lung.
The doctor describing what happened when Floyd became non-responsive.
The knee remains on the neck for another 3 minutes and 27 seconds after he takes his last breath. After there's no pulse, the knee remains on the neck for another 2 minutes and 44 seconds.
ABC's Mark Remillard reports in the cross-examination of Dr. Tobin.
The prosecution's medical expert, Dr. Martin Tobin, testified that George Floyd died of low oxygen stemming from his subdual by Derek Chauvin. Defense attorney Eric Nelson challenging that, saying Floyd's low oxygen could have been from the fentanyl found in his system. Tobin said no.
Fentanyl can also cause death as a result of low oxygen to the brain, right?
But it would have to be low through respiratory depression.
Tobin says Floyd's respiratory rate was normal right up to the point that he stopped breathing, and Tobin says Floyd would have had a much lower respiratory rate if fentanyl was what killed him. Mark Remillard, ABC News.
Jurors also hearing from an expert on the use of force. Here again, ABC's Mark Remillard.
The prosecution pushing back on defense suggestions that Derek Chauvin and the other officers may have been distracted from George Floyd and his increasingly perilous position by the growing crowd of bystanders that were yelling and screaming at the officers. LAPD Sergeant Jody Steiger testifying for the prosecution that he does not believe Chauvin was distracted.
In the body-worn video, you can hear Mr. Floyd displaying his discomfort and pain, and you can also hear the defendant responding to him.
Mark Remillard, ABC News.
And the jury also hearing from medical examiners this week. Dr. Lindsay Thomas was the assistant medical examiner in Hennepin County and trained the medical examiner who did the autopsy on George Floyd. She told the court that Floyd didn't die of a drug overdose.
It was not the type of death that has been reported in fentanyl overdose, for example, where someone becomes very sleepy and then just sort of gradually, calmly, peacefully stops breathing. This was not that kind of a death.
Dr. Thomas linking Floyd's cause of death, low oxygen, with the knee on his neck.
What it means to me is that the activities of the law enforcement officers resulted in Mr. Floyd's death, and that specifically those activities were the subdual, the restraint, and the neck compression.
Jurors also hearing from forensic investigators. Here again, ABC's Alex Perez.
Forensic investigators testifying as prosecutors show the jury images of items recovered from the scene. Their initial report did not include pills later found in the backseat of the police squad car and in Floyd's vehicle. Tests confirming those pills contain methamphetamine and fentanyl. The defense arguing Floyd spit them out in his tussle with police.
It was a mixed bag this week in the fight against COVID. On one hand, more Americans are getting vaccinated and more states are opening up vaccine eligibility. But health officials now say the UK variant is the dominant version here in the U.S.
Based on our most recent estimates from CDC surveillance, the B.1.1.7 variant is now the most common lineage circulating in the United States.
CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky. Officials also saying younger, unvaccinated people are getting infected. ABC's Whit Johnson has more.
The CDC increasingly worried about younger, unvaccinated Americans, tracking clusters of cases connected to daycare centers and youth sports. Hospital admissions are on the rise in at least 16 states. Cases in Michigan nearly tripling in the last 3 weeks. Doctors there are seeing many children needing critical care. In Chicago, 18-year-old Zamaya Bell loved dancing and was a member of the Palm Squad. But her family says she got COVID in March, was hospitalized, and went into cardiac arrest, her mom rushing to her side. But Zamaya's condition rapidly deteriorating. The high school junior passing away from complications from the virus. Her mother with a warning for other parents.
This is not over. This virus is killing. No age to it, no race to it, nothing. It don't care.
More vaccines are starting to reach younger Americans. Those vaccines believed to work against the variants. More evidence protection from vaccines will last. New data shows high levels of antibodies at least 6 months out from the Moderna vaccine. And more than 6 months into its study, Pfizer also reporting its vaccine is highly effective.
Pfizer's asking the FDA for authorization for its vaccine in 12 to 15-year-olds. This after sites in North Carolina and one site in Colorado suspended administering the Johnson & Johnson vaccine due to adverse reactions. Dr. Ashish Jha, dean of the Brown University School of Public Health, talks to ABC's Cecilia Vega about the pauses and says adverse reactions are rare.
I actually just see it as a system working. You know, we are vaccinating millions of people every day in tens of thousands of sites. You're going to have things like this. And I think it's great that they took a pause, made sure everybody was okay, and resuming after that investigation. We want to do this very carefully, and I think things are going actually much better than I expected. I'm not worried at all, and I think it is good to observe these things and make sure nothing serious is going on.
Walk us through what the potential side effects are, because there are, as there are with any vaccine, potential side effects. And what are the side effects that potentially we should be worried about?
Yeah, absolutely. Every vaccine, every medicine we take has side effects. There's nothing in the world that has no side effects at all. What I expect people to have, and what we've seen from clinical trials, is most people get a sore arm, starts about 8-12 hours after the vaccination, and can last for a couple of days. That's pretty common. We do see, especially after the second shot, for about 24 hours, people can have chills. Some people have low-grade fevers, body aches. That's just your immune system really revved up after the second shot. This stuff varies. Most people do very, very well. The only thing that we do watch for carefully is that with Moderna and Pfizer, we've seen about a couple of people out of a million, so very rare, have a severe allergic reaction, usually in people who've had a history of severe allergic reactions. So we just observe for that and make sure that people aren't suffering from that. But otherwise, these vaccines are incredibly safe.
There's also debate this week on whether people should show proof of vaccination. ABC's Sherry Preston has more on the legal questions surrounding vaccine passports.
In Texas and Florida, they have prohibited the use of vaccine passports to prove you've been inoculated against COVID. But ABC News Chief Legal Analyst Dan Abrams says the rules are different for employees who aren't in the public sector.
They can probably do that with regard to government entities, government businesses, government-related businesses, etc. But they probably can't do it with regard to those private businesses.
Private employers would have to allow for exemptions, things like medical and even religious reasons. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
The gun reform debate rekindled, but not without more tragedy. ABC's Brian Clark says the president urging lawmakers to act as more Americans die from mass shootings this week.
America again dealing with mass shootings and wrestling with what to do about them.
Gun violence in this country is an epidemic.
President Biden signing several executive actions, but also saying it's time for Congress to step up.
This is a view by the American people as an American issue. And I'm willing to work with anyone to get these done. And it's long past time that we act.
The president speaking amid two more mass shootings within one day of each other. One at a company in Texas, leaving several hurt and killing at least one. Amelia Rodriguez hiding as bullets flew.
I remember El Paso, I remember Virginia, and all these shootings going on everywhere. And you never know, because you never know if he's going to come back or no.
Another in South Carolina, five dead, including two children. The shooter took his own life, leaving Sheriff Kevin Tolson to say,
there's nothing about this right now that makes sense to any of us.
But there might not be enough support in Congress to pass new gun reform legislation. More from ABC's Andy Field.
President Biden taking executive actions where he can on guns, in large part because
he is also clear-eyed about the challenges in moving forward with legislation with the current makeup of the Senate.
Spokesperson Jen Psaki acknowledging that it's not likely gun laws will get past the Senate Republican filibusters, but urging them to at least vote for the House pass tougher background checks. Andy Field, ABC News, Washington.
Word this week that embattled Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz brought up the idea of pardons during the Trump White House. Gaetz is facing human trafficking charges. More from ABC's Jonathan Carl.
Donald Trump broke his silence on the investigation into whether one of his most fervent supporters in Congress had a sexual relationship with a 17-year-old girl. Congressman Matt Gaetz has never asked me for a pardon, Trump said in a written statement. It must also be remembered that he has totally denied the accusations against him. Gaetz may never have directly asked Trump for a pardon, but multiple former Trump administration officials tell ABC News that the now embattled congressman had urged the Trump White House to grant blanket preemptive pardons for Trump's political allies, including Gaetz himself.
ABC's John Santucci has details on the charges Gaetz is facing.
This involves several different aspects, an inappropriate relationship being one, and then travel. Transport, and that's where this charge or allegation of human trafficking comes in, because if Matt Gaetz took a minor, paid for her travel, that's where this rises to a whole nother level.
Investigators in Los Angeles released details on the car crash involving Tiger Woods. More from ABC's Alex Stone.
Investigators say in their report that Woods was driving at almost 90 miles an hour when the SUV went across lanes of traffic through a center median, hit a sign across oncoming lanes, hitting a tree, going airborne, and then coming to a rest. Speed was what caused the crash, says Captain James Powers.
The impact of the vehicle when it hit the tree caused the vehicle to go airborne and do a somewhat pirouette, landing on its side.
He says there were no signs Woods was intoxicated or that distracted driving was involved. Alex Stone, ABC News, Los Angeles.
Rapper and actor DMX has died this week at the age of 50. More from ABC's Jason Nathanson.
DMX's family announcing the death of the Yonkers, New York-raised rapper, who was born Earl Simmons. The family saying he passed away at White Plains Hospital after being on life support, hospitalized April 2nd. In a statement, they called him a warrior who fought until the very end. The hospital says Simmons suffered a catastrophic cardiac arrest. Several reports say DMX suffered from a drug overdose, but the family has not confirmed that. Simmons had a long history of drug abuse.
Coming up.
I looked into his eyes, and he's... eyes sparkled.
Decades together and now reunited after more than a year apart, when World News This Week continues.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
COVID-19 kept them apart, but one couple from St. Louis finally got to reunite. ABC's David Muir has their story, reading the letter sent in by one of their kids.
It started like this. Dear ABC and David Muir, my parents just celebrated their 72nd anniversary. My dad is in a memory care facility. My mom lives on her own. For the first time in over a year, my mom and dad got to actually touch and hug in person. 72 years of marriage. 13 children, tons of grandchildren, and a long and happy love story. My dad is 94 and my mom is 95, Virginia and Jack Byrne. As my mom was waiting to see my dad, she said, "Each minute feels like an hour. I'm as nervous as a schoolgirl." That nervous schoolgirl.
Oh, David.
Virginia Byrne from St. Louis telling us about that long-awaited hug with her husband, Jack.
The lights went on again in my life. I looked into his eyes. And his eyes sparkled, as they always did when we were close together. It was a wonderful moment. I could hardly let go.
One more couple back together.
And those are the people and events that made World News This Week. World News This Week was written and produced by Joy Piazza. I'm Chuck Sievertson, ABC News, New York.